Well, hello. For those of you who are new listeners or maybe haven't heard us in a while, I'm Steve Haskin.
And I'm Andre Shane.
And this is our podcast we do, mostly about movies. Andre and I both studied film in college, and we both work professionally. We're freelancers in the Chicago video production world. And we started, the whole concept started because we would discuss movies a lot, driving to and from jobs. And we just keep that concept right on rolling through this podcast.
That's right. We're driving right now, and we're talking movies. And today's subject is superhero movies. Very important to, I guess, point out, Steve, that we're not talking about all comic book movies, because it seems like every movie that comes out these days is based on a comic book.
Correct. For purposes of this discussion, we will not be talking about things like Ghost World or 300, A History of Violence, but superheroes.
Very specific, specific topic. And superheroes, you know, we both grew up reading comic books. I actually learned how to speak English by reading comic books. And the superhero concept always was very resonant to me. What appeals to you about the superhero concept? And maybe more specifically, Steve, why do you think the concept of superheroes is so popular now? There's just dozens of superhero movies out there. It's never really happened before in history. You'd get one or two, but now it seems like every other movie that comes out has some kind of a superhero theme to it. Why now, Steve? Why do you think?
Well, there's two reasons to that I've thought of. One, there's always the appeal when times are rough, you know, economically, war, what have you, heroes are appealing, because heroes have a clear cut, you know. A lot of times superheroes, their decision-making isn't as murky. Now, certainly from the 1960s on, superheroes in the world of comic books have gotten more complicated, and some of them can get very shades of gray, but they're still at their heart, at their base, Superman, Batman, that sort of thing. Superheroes are larger than life, people do heroic deeds, they have various powers to help them combat the forces of evil, and they don't have to deal with legislative bodies or trying to fully understand
the legal
where
system.
The supervillains are coming from.
Right, right.
They can just bypass all that. The other reason I would say, more bluntly, of why there's an influx of superhero movies, and not just the fact that the successful ones have made a lot of money, but it seems like for years, a lot of people wanted to make a superhero movie, and they couldn't quite do it. There were a lot of failed attempts.
Right.
And recently, not only have there been a lot of superhero movies, but there's been a lot of pretty good superhero movies.
Exactly, exactly. Where you got the feeling
that filmmakers get it. It's like that nut has been cracked, you know?
Very, very true. But I mean, as far as just the overall superhero concept, I think you're right to a large degree, because, you know, the black and white aspect of what superheroes represent, the no moral equivalence, there's right versus wrong, and I'm going to use my whatever powers or abilities I may have to fight on the side of what is right, and there's something very, very appealing about that concept in our world where everything is murky and everything is great. And also, it's a very American concept as well. And, you know, America doesn't have a mythology per se. You know, we don't have Zeus, but we do have Thor. At least the comic version of Thor. Superman and Batman. These iconic characters that are under 100 years old, but have a mythological vibe to them. In other words, they are superhuman characters whose stories can point a way for us to kind of crack the code of the world, the crazy world that surrounds all of us. And I think that's, you know, all of those reasons kind of combined together is the reason there's so many superhero movies today. There's a commercial aspect to it as well that's never to be underestimated, but
kind of stripping away, too, I find that's the stuff about superhero movies that really both enrages and kind of mystifies some audience members and a lot of critics who just kind of hate the genre.
Right.
Like, they hate the simplicity of it. They kind of liken it to action movies of the 80s, that it's all just mindless people punching each other, and that there's no depth whatsoever. And, you know, I think both of us are in agreement. We don't think that's the case.
No,
you know,
it's certainly not
the concept of the hero in any culture, it's, you know, even if the hero is simple, it represents all sorts of means of escape and dreams of the people. And
absolutely. And it has an enormous amount of metaphorical value. I think comic books generally have been frowned upon by the more highbrow culture in the United States. And it's interesting, you know, graphic literature has existed in other cultures for centuries, particularly in Asia, where comic books are not considered lowbrow. And it's only until recently when kind of what we call the geek culture has risen to huge prominence. I was just at the Chicago Comic Book Convention, and it was amazing. It was like 4 days, a packed house, thousands and thousands and thousands of people went to this comic book convention, and it wasn't even one of the largest ones in the country, but certainly a big one. It just kind of, I was walking around amazed. I haven't been to a comic book convention since I was probably 14, and just amazed by the turnout, amazed by the kind of people that were there, and the total cross-section of, you know, geekdom that attended. So
yeah, well, there's
geeks rule.
I'd go so far as to say there's a generational shift too, that
yes,
people our age and younger, they've grown up with a wide variety of comic books, you know, both silly and serious, and just accept comic books as any other art form.
Yeah.
You know, some of them can be quite deep, some of them can be shallow, some of them are good, some of them are stupid.
Absolutely.
But so the concept of making a movie based on a comic book, even a superhero one, it's not something we roll our eyes at.
Absolutely.
And we
it's
can
a
appreciate
viable art form.
It. And it could be really cool.
Absolutely.
I don't ever want to take away the cool aspect of it.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll get into our favorite and our least favorite movies, but, you know, I know you and I both grew up reading X-Men, and Wolverine was always my favorite character, and I always kind of dreamed of how cool it would be to see a Wolverine in a movie.
Absolutely. And you know, for a long time, people would take these properties, and for a long time, I would probably say in the mid-70s, you know, there were superhero serials going back to the 40s. There was Batman,
sure.
There was Captain America. There were cheapy serials that were taken about as seriously as comic books were taken at that time, which is to say, not seriously at all. Kids, it would be kid stuff, funny books, they'd call them, and there would be, you know, nobody would really pay much mind to these serials. And what happened was there were certainly a few notable TV shows, like the Batman series in the 60s, and then in the 70s there were some Marvel titles that attempted to make it into in television. Specifically, there was a Spider-Man live action show, there was a Captain America live action show, and the best of the shows was the Incredible Hulk, of course,
Hulk,
on CBS, which really was just a fugitive with, you know, with the main character occasionally turning into a green bodybuilder and, you know, dispense justice in a very slow motion way. But it wasn't really until like 78 when Superman 1 came out, where all of a sudden they made a fairly high,
high
quality film with a fantastic cast. I mean, Marlon Brando, Gene Hackman. What more do you need than Marlon Brando and Gene Hackman, really? But on top of that, they found a great Superman in Christopher Reeve, the guy who seemed to be born to play the role. And so that seems like the beginning of the modern superhero genre.
I agree.
Do you you're a fan of the first Superman movie, Steve?
I am. I mean, I'm a fan of the first Superman movie. I think it's a great movie. It benefits tremendously of it's one of the great John Williams scores.
Yes.
That, I mean, a large ally in that movie. My only problems with the Superman movie are that I've never was a huge Superman fan.
Right.
So, you know, as a movie goes and as a comic book movie, it hits all the right iconic notes. The performances are great. It's great.
Yes.
I mean, I always found Superman a little boring, but, you know, there are other lines of thought that Superman's kind of the ultimate superhero, and other versions are just pale knockoffs.
But. Right, right. Well, he was the first official superhero, unless you count, like, Zorro or something that was created earlier, or even Sherlock Holmes to a certain extent.
But I will say that the Superman movie is very good, and it's also, it, like some of the TV show attempts in the 70s, and unlike the Batman TV show, the Superman movie is very serious. It takes, you know, it's not deathly serious. It's not devoid of fun or humor, but it doesn't wink or mock the idea of Superman.
Well, you know, I disagree with you a little bit. There definitely comes a point in the Superman movie where it becomes a little bit slapsticky in comedy, particularly when it comes to Lex Luthor and his Annette Beatty and that whole group. You know, there's like the silly musical theme that's associated with those characters, and they're presented in a way that's very, very removed from the way these characters actually are in the comic books. So if there's any problem I have with the original Superman movie, it's the way Lex Luthor is treated. I love Gene Hackman. I love Gene Hackman as Lex Luthor, but just the concept of the character in those films is just off to me. It doesn't really ring true, and they just spend too much time just kind of cutting it up there. So even in that film, they kind of hedge their bets a little bit. They're unwilling to fully commit to the mythology and, you know, make it completely serious, but they make it serious enough where the movie, it's not a super consistent tone throughout the film, but it certainly works. It's effective.
Sure. Yeah,
it's hard to argue that the film is solid, it's watchable, and it's successful. And it was successful, and of course had a fairly successful, at least one successful sequel in Superman 2 that a lot of people regard very highly, but not so much you, right?
No, I have a lot of love and fondness for Superman 2. As a kid, I loved it. It has an awesome reputation. A couple of years ago, I saw it again for the first time in a long time, and it's way schlockier than I remembered.
Yes.
And it's dated. But there are still parts of it that are cool. What Superman 2 really established as a pattern, which I feel most of the superhero movies since have tried to duplicate, either, you know, successfully or not, that the first movie is always the origin story. Always, always the origin story, no matter who the superhero is. And then the second movie, it's kind of like, okay, now that we've gotten that out of the way, we can get down to business, which often translates to just more fighting. But still, it's nice that, you know, especially if you are already a Superman fan and you're well, you know very well how Superman came to Earth and you know the whole origin story, it's nice to then just watch a movie where, okay, Superman can just get on with the business of the story. We don't have to waste 45 minutes to an hour explaining who Superman is.
Right, right.
And so Superman 2's got that great villains, the trio of villains who he's combating,
right,
like Luthor's still around. So there's some great action sequences and good superhero fighting. Well, entertaining. For the time.
Yes,
for 1980,
yes.
They were pretty good.
Absolutely. And yeah. I remember seeing the film in the theater, and it was very effective for the time, and it was really cool, and it was just good, again, good to see the genre get some respect in the way it's treated by the filmmakers, you know, where the character is understood, at least, by the filmmakers, where a lot of times prior to that, people making these things just seem to be just literally just dripping with contempt for the characters that they were dealing with, and literally going out of their way to show us how much better they were than the material they were handling, and that, you know, never amounts to a particularly good film. So the first couple of Superman films definitely achieve that without having the benefit of a consistent director. Richard Donner actually got fired from the second Superman film after shooting most of it and was replaced by Richard Lester from the Hard Day's Night fame. And, well, Richard Donner a couple of years ago went back and did the Richard Donner cut of the film. And, of course, you could rent that on DVD and see how it would have been if Richard Lester did not replace Richard Donner, wouldn't have been much different, to be honest with you. It would have been pretty much the same film. But I would say, what would be the next big step in the genre of superhero?
Well, there were two more Superman movies in the 80s. Each one got increasingly sillier,
right,
and diminished in quality. What's interesting to note is that in the 80s, you know, Superman was successful. Comic books were selling in the 80s.
Right, sure.
And yet there was not... I mean, was there even another attempt? I mean, surely people probably had projects they couldn't get off the ground, but the next notable superhero movie I have is 1989 and Tim Burton's Batman movie.
That's right,
but Batman. So, I mean, that's 11 years after the first Superman movie and 9 years after the last semi-good Superman movie.
Absolutely, and Tim Burton's Batman movies kind of followed the success of... Well, I guess we should say that in the world of comic books, there was an actual revolution in the comic book world in the 80s that
yes.
took place in the 80s as a result of literally a couple of groundbreaking artists working in the field. Not artists, but auteurs, let's call them,
yes.
because that's what they were. Namely, Frank Miller, who was both an artist and a writer and brilliant at both, and... Alan Moore. There were certainly others.
Lots of
named.
Other, yeah.
But those
guys,
two
but
guys.
Those two guys, and specifically, Watchmen, Alan Moore's series.
Exactly.
And then Frank Miller's,
I guess you'd say Dark Knight Returns.
I mean, it's mainly The Dark Knight Returns, and he also did another Batman series called Batman Year One.
But exactly.
Certainly The Dark Knight Returns and Watchmen, studied in comic book circles. From the moment they came out and
Absolutely.
Ever since.
Well, they changed the
rightly
medium.
Rightly held up as masterpieces.
They changed the medium yes. because there's masterpieces. They absolutely, they opened the door to the art form being taken seriously. And Hollywood, particularly with The Dark Knight, which was just a smash hit and as a graphic novel, Hollywood took note and recruited Tim Burton to make Batman films that were very influenced by Dark Knight.
And yes, extremely influenced by Frank Miller's take on Batman.
Exactly, but not too influenced. And I have to kind of talk about the Tim Burton films because honestly, I'm not a big fan of those movies. How do you feel about the Batmans?
At the time I really loved the first Batman. I didn't think it, you know, even as a kid when I saw it, I didn't think it was flawless by any means. And you know, had a little bit more of the 60s camp in it than I think even Tim Burton was willing to admit.
Right, right.
That it's kind of a pop art spectacle film.
Yeah.
And it has its enjoyable moments. And it, in terms of the movies, it was a breakthrough, not only in, you know... See, I don't know if you could call it a breakthrough in taking comic books seriously, because you could argue that Superman took comic books really
exactly.
seriously.
It did break new ground there.
It did break new ground in the casting, where Michael Keaton was Batman.
Right.
And it's suddenly, after, you know, the 80s were spent where, without superhero movies, in place of them, you had these extremely buffed up, muscly action stars.
Right.
And Batman established that you could make a movie where the hero is not Arnold Schwarzenegger or Sylvester Stallone. It's Michael Keaton just in a suit.
Exactly. And both Stallone and Schwarzenegger were actually seriously considered for the role of Batman at some point.
Yeah.
Which, of course, would have been ridiculous on both counts, especially on Schwarzenegger. But
the Michael Keaton casting, it worked. So it opened up the eyes of both Hollywood and probably actors and directors that, hey, maybe I can make one of these comic book movies, but I wouldn't be restricted to just using, you know, Dolph Lundgren as my lead.
Exactly. Well, I do agree with you that the Keaton casting did open up some doors. It opened up some eyes in a sense that people realized that there's a... You could hire an interesting actor to play the superhero, and that actor will make the journey more entertaining, because you wouldn't just spend the entire run of the movie waiting for the guy to put on his mask and escape and become the superhero, and instead enjoy spending time with the character when he was out of the costume. At least that was the concept. I have to be honest with you, I've always loathed Michael Keaton as Batman. I like Michael Keaton.
Yeah.
But I just, the casting as Bruce Wayne really irritated me. I did not think he nailed that character. I did not think he had the prerequisite darkness. I think his look was kind of silly. I thought he was way little and personally
not overly dashing.
Well, yeah, Bruce Wayne has a quality to him where he puts on an act as a womanizer, and he's also, you know, a large, powerful dude. He doesn't need to put on a suit of armor to be intimidating. And also there's just an undercurrent of darkness to Bruce Wayne that has to be very visible. I didn't really feel that in Michael Keaton. Michael Keaton in that movie is kind of distracted. He seems kind of like his brain is always somewhere else. And I don't know. I really, really did not like his casting. I tried to warm up to it over the years. And what instead ended up happening with me, and at least the first Batman movie, is just a realization of how schlocky that movie is in many cases. That was a very rushed film, you know. The studio pushed Burton to speed up production beyond all reason so they could mark some kind of arbitrary release date. And what ended up happening is a lot of stuff that would never, never seep into a major Hollywood release ended up in the Batman movie. I think the movie looks kind of murky. I don't like the cinematography in it. It has an amazing art direction. The art direction in that film is fairly fantastic. But everything else in the movie, I think, is sort of second rate. And I think Tim Burton himself would probably admit that, because he improved on the formula with his second Batman film.
Really?
Well, I thought that as a film, that was probably a better film overall.
I would disagree with that. Yeah.
You like the first one better? Is it like, why? I mean, did Nicholson make it for you? I mean, obviously Nicholson is better than, let's say, Danny DeVito as the Penguin. But second movie just had so much more just pure imagination in it. You know.
The second one's not without its charms. I just felt that the second one, story wise, is a utter mess. Just doesn't hold together at all. And I had no interest in either the Penguin or the Christopher Walken villain character.
Right. I thought Christopher Walken kind of made that film in many ways. But
I agree with the kind of historical consensus that the best parts of that movie were the parts with Michelle Pfeiffer's Catwoman.
True.
Or Catwoman and Batman together. Like,
exactly.
The two of them together could have made an interesting movie. The Penguin mucks it up. And it's an old criticism of Tim Burton that is an interesting visual stylist. He's, you know, the story, he's not great at story. And I don't know, I just thought Batman Returns was a bit of a mess. I will say, in general, over the whole, I guess, the first run of Batman movies, going back briefly to your point about how kind of secretly schlocky the first one is the historical line on those Batman movies is that each one was worse than the one before it, and it started out as this very serious, interesting franchise that got corrupted into became this cartoon. And
certainly when Joel Schumacher took over.
Sure, it did get worse and more cartoony, but it's not like it wasn't kind of cartoony to begin with.
Right. I made some lists here, Steve, and I have a list titled Overrated Superhero Movies. And Batman is right at the top of the list there. Do you think there's a superhero series that pops in your head that you think is overrated?
A series?
Like, well, okay, forget series. Let's talk individual films. This is sort of a pattern with superhero movies. When they tend to be directed by the same director for at least a couple of them, I tend to lump them together a little bit.
Sure.
Because unless it's a total horrible compromise, drop-off in quality, you'll see me sometimes going, okay, Spider-Man 1 and Spider-Man 2, kind of in the same ballpark as far as I'm concerned. But overrated, Steve, is there a superhero movie that you like less than a lot of other people do?
Maybe the first X-Men movie. I was always particularly attached to the X-Men. I loved the X-Men and Wolverine, and I like X2 quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But the first X-Men movie is... I don't think it's terrible by any means, but to me it's a little muddled, and a lot of people really loved X2, me among them, and seem to have had some retro revisionist history of how good the first X-Men movie was. Whereas if I gave it a letter grade, I would give the first X-Men movie like a B-.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those movies that succeeds almost just for not failing horribly. Like, the fact that it's not a disaster is pretty good, but the casting's about 50-50 in that. Some of the effects are kind of schlocky, how they put the team together. I don't know.
It's a lot of characters to juggle. You got to give it
that. I'm not saying the degree of difficulty wasn't high. I'm just saying, you know, I don't think that was necessarily all that great a movie.
The execution.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting, Steve, because I have the X-Men, just period, on the list of overrated films.
Yeah.
I'm not really 100% sure that Bryan Singer really nailed the X-Men as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I was a big fan of the X-Men comic as well growing up, and while I enjoy the X-Men films, and I'm even going to say I enjoyed even the third X-Men film to some extent, I do feel that they are overall a little overrated. I think the movies are a little reliant on the metaphor for racial, you know, or ethnic prejudice of some sort. And the movies, all the X-Men movies are so committed to this metaphor that I think it just becomes a little over the top, you know? It's like essentially turning the United States into some kind of a pseudo-fascist state that's ready to throw mutants, quote-unquote, into concentration camp.
Well,
I think it's a little heavy-handed, and
it is a little heavy-handed, and it's kind of heavy-handed in the comic books.
Well, it is sometimes, but it's not always that in the comic books.
It's not always, but I'd say a lot of the time.
Well, I mean, when the X-Men travel to the Kree homeworld to battle the evil lizardous invaders, I mean, that has absolutely nothing to do with the ethnic injustice metaphor. You know, so in a comic, that kind of stuff, you kind of start with it, and it serves as the backbone. But in the movies, that's all there was to everything. There was nothing more to it. It was all about that metaphor from the first frame of the first X-Men to the last frame of the last X-Men.
I would argue, though, that it's a very effective metaphor. I mean, part of the appeal to the X-Men, that's the whole mutant angle, which is what really separates the X-Men from other superhero teams, is a very effective metaphor, because, you know, when you create this thing as the mutants and how everybody, even the other superheroes, think they're different, it's great because it can be applied to anything. It can be applied to, you know, if you're reading the X-Men, you can think, oh, I'm kind of a mutant because I'm gay, or I'm kind of a mutant because I'm a black person in a mostly white neighborhood, or I'm
kind of
a mutant because I'm a Jewish kid in a mostly Christian neighborhood. It's the ultimate, the X-Men are the heroes of the outsiders.
Exactly. Well, that's their success.
That aspect didn't bother me about the movies, because I always thought that was a main strength of the X-Men. Is the X-Men as a team are very clearly identifying, you know, we're not just any heroes. We are, you know, people kind of shit on us and look down on us, too.
Yeah, we're defending the society that is.
And I thought that worked great.
Us.
I mean, what I loved about X2 was the combination of, I thought they very effectively used the outsider metaphors. I mean, specifically in that movie, it's really heavily angled towards
gay.
I mean, there's a whole scene where a kid comes out.
Yeah, it's
which,
a
I mean,
Bryan
Singer
gayness,
supposedly
yes.
is gay and probably had a large hand in that.
Right.
But that, and also just the action set pieces of that. Like that, my critique of the first X-Men movie, which is a critique of a lot of these origin movies, are, you know, I like the comic. I like the fight. You know, if I'm watching a superhero movie, I want to see some action set pieces.
Absolutely. I don't want to hear big conversations.
X2, I thought, really delivered on the action set pieces.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to like in X-Men 1. I really like X-Men 1, especially I like the way Wolverine is handled. Like yourself, I'm a big Wolverine fan. Wolverine was a character actually in the, really, really rose to prominence in the 80s when, again, Frank Miller kind of reinvented the character, and Wolverine was a very, he was a fairly hardcore character for comic books. Up to that point, I mean, superheroes, comic book superheroes were very, very pure and very chaste and very, you know, kind of milquetoasty a little bit. Wolverine came along and kind of broke that mold. And he was vicious and he was not nice and he was not good looking and he was not tall and he was not super smart. There was really one thing he was really good at, and that was killing people.
Yes.
That was his job.
And even more than Batman, Wolverine really brought the concept of the anti-hero into the comic book world.
Exactly.
That here's a guy who maybe at the end of the day, he's on the team of the good guys, but, you know, he doesn't Wolverine very much has a code that he lives by, but it's not necessarily the code that most of society lives by.
Absolutely. He's kind of a samurai type character who's comfortable with the fact that his skill set definitely scares the shit out of most people, and he didn't mind it. He didn't mind being an outsider. He kind of liked it, got off on it, and didn't think of himself as a hero at all in heroic terms. He just kind of lived by his code and tried to stick it literally to the people that deserved it, and he was also a lot of fun, was, of course, the breakout character of the X-Men. In the movies, of course, Wolverine becomes really the main central character of the whole film. I'm not a huge fan of Hugh Jackman as Wolverine. I never was. I like Hugh Jackman as an actor, talented guy. I heard he's a great guy to work with, but he just doesn't seem very Wolverine-like. He's a little too pretty for me, and, you know, Wolverine is a guy who's in, you know, sits there in the corner. You don't particularly want to talk to him. He's a little scary. He probably hasn't showered in a few days, and he's not going to pick up the hottest chick in the bar. He's going to, you know, beat up her boyfriend. I think Hugh Jackman was really none of those things. But in the first film, I liked the way they handled him.
Yeah.
I liked the way he was introduced in the first film. And I hated the way he was handled in the third film. Overall, though, Steve, I mean, just to get back to the overall aspect.
Should we get back to the overrated? And
I think it's a little
overrated.
I mean,
if we're going to talk about overrated, you know, I would even say the first Iron Man, to me, is very overrated. I like that film.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that film's a lot of fun, but, you know, that's probably not one of my top 5 superhero movies? Maybe top 5? I mean, it's a lot of fun. I watched it, again, not that long ago, mm-hmm. and it's certainly entertaining as all hell, but, you know, that thing's not a masterpiece. And
right.
I would even throw in Batman Begins, if we're talking overrated. Again, I feel a lot of times with superhero movies, they're the ones I really like, and then which are generally well-reviewed. You know, I don't have that radical taste of the superhero movies I think are great. And then there are the ones that, you know, I think are pretty shitty.
Right.
And again, I'm not really rocking the boat with that.
Right.
You know, for me to say the Fantastic Four movies look like a bucket of shit doesn't really make me some radical, crazy journalist.
No.
But Batman Begins is, again, I really enjoy Batman Begins. I like that. I own that movie. I think mm-hmm. it's great. That said, I think that movie's a little long. I think that movie, in terms of the origin thing that drives me a little crazy, there's a lot of time in that movie spent in the ninja training camp. Like, a lot of fucking time.
The ninja training camps.
I don't dislike the ninja training camp. I love the fight sequence to get out of the ninja training camp. But, you know, I'm here to watch a movie called Batman, and I got a lot of Bruce Wayne up in the mountains footage.
Right, ninja. You got a lot of ninja stuff.
It's a lot of it.
That's interesting. That tends to be, I like Batman Begins a lot more than you do, and I kind of pile it in with The Dark Knight to a large extent. For me, Batman Begins kind of collapses a little bit in the third act. It gets a little silly. But I like the way the Batman origin is handled in the film very much. It's kind of, it's original and engaging. And I have to say that I like the origin story. I love it in the first Superman film. I think it's very resonant. And I tend to like origin stories.
I mean, my favorite of the superhero origin stories, hands down, is the first Spider-Man movie. Sam Raimi's Spider-Man.
Very well handled, absolutely.
That's great. And because with Superman and Batman and, you know, unfortunately Wolverine and even Iron Man, even though we're watching these origins in real time, it feels more like, okay, here's the superhero, and then we have to explain how we got to the superhero. You know, like, well, what made this adult person like this? Like, what happened in this person's past? What's great about the Spider-Man origin story is the movies are a great medium for conveying the joy of, like, discovering you've got a power.
Right.
Like, that is what, because Spider-Man himself as a character starts out as a teenager. Like, you know, when Spider-Man first appears in the world of comics, he's not, you know, like, Batman, in the sense that comic heroes don't age, Batman and Superman are between 35 and 40, you know, for all eternity. But Spider-Man's more like 23, you know, maybe even younger.
Right.
And the Spider-Man movie did a great job of just conveying, you know, the excitement of, like, wow, I could swing around through the buildings. And it was an awesome, I saw that movie opening weekend, and the crowd was really into it, and it was just great. It's just a moment of pure cinematic joy.
Right.
Of Peter Parker discovering he can do all this cool stuff.
Absolutely. Well, I agree. I love that as well, and I think the Spider-Man movies are not overrated. I think Spider-Man movies have
the first two
aged well.
Yeah.
I don't hate the last one either, to be honest with you. I don't think it's a massive fall off in quality. The last one suffers from, like, just biting off way more than it could chew.
Yeah.
And suffers mainly in comparison, as opposed to just in and of itself. But you know how it happens. It's just you get this natural backlash against something. You know, if I love you know this Strokes album, I could potentially hate the next Strokes album because it's never going to be good as the first Strokes album. You see what I'm saying? It's sort of a
I totally agree with that line of thinking. I still think Spider-Man 3 kind of sucks.
Oh, fair enough. I can understand your point of view on that, but overall, I mean, Spider-Man series pretty solid. And what about underrated superhero movies? What are your thoughts there? What's the, you know, maybe let me just name off a few underrated.
Yeah, tell me some of your list.
Here's my underrated superhero movies. I got The Punisher Warzone, which came out last year. Nobody saw it.
I've never seen them, but you know, you are not the first. You're not
it
the first person to tell
solid,
me.
It's a solid,
right.
Very yeah. entertaining action film with some. It's definitely rated R. It's a very hardcore character. Again, came out of Marvel in the 80s when Marvel was really pushing the envelope of presenting anti-heroes. And Punisher is this sort of a weird, he's not weird at all. He's a sort of a comic book version of, let's say, a Charles Bronson in Death Wish kind of character. So essentially he's a comic book version of a film character. So when you make a film out of the comic book facsimile of a film character, it kind of feels like a copy of a copy. So it's difficult to get away with those kind of characters. And Punisher, in fact, I mean, there's been like three Punisher movies. There was one with Dolph Lundgren in the 80s.
Yes.
That nobody saw. And
I unfortunately saw it.
There was one with Thomas Jane that's horrible. And John Travolta, just terrible. And then there was this one, which was so much better than the Thomas Jane one that it's, you know, kind of took me by surprise. I'm not going to tell you that this is some kind of masterpiece of filmmaking, but it is an enjoyable genre film. What are some of the other films I think are underrated? Ghost Rider is quite entertaining.
Really?
Nicolas Cage. Quite entertaining. It looks really stupid. But if you kind of let it do its thing on you, it's very, very enjoyable film. What else?
Well, you know, we were discussing the third X-Men movies. Kind of underrated.
Well, I think the third. I don't want to give too much props to the third X-Men movie. They run it. You could see
well,
it. Just
okay, let me say it's underrated, not necessarily, you know, a hidden gem.
Right. People tend to regard it as total shit, And I don't think it's total shit. I think it's basically...
That's how I feel about the Wolverine movie, too. That I had a good time at the Wolverine movie. Again, maybe expecting it to be really terrible.
Wolverine Origins. Yeah,
yeah. I expected it to be really terrible, and the fact that it was just kind of bad
yeah,
felt like a triumph.
Exactly. Well, sometimes lowered expectations are the best expectations to have. But yeah, I know what you're saying. Again, the Incredible Hulk, the last Hulk movie, not the Ang Lee one, the yeah. last one, I think kind of captured the comic book excitement of what Hulk represents. Whereas the Ang Lee version was just overwrought. I mean, I appreciate what Ang Lee was trying to do. I appreciate that he was trying to make a serious film from the Hulk. And a lot of people do like the film. And I think the film has a lot to like in it. But it's just kind of a failure. So it tends to be a prime example of a filmmaker taking the subject matter just a little too seriously. But Incredible Hulk doesn't. It's solid. It's entertaining. It has some good action. It's over in 90 minutes. You don't think about it too much, but it sort of does its thing. And it has a lot of fun Hulk action. So Hulk smash a lot of stuff in that film. and that's what we want to see from Hulk, right? We don't want to see psychoanalysis. You know, we don't want to see Bruce Banner on a psychiatrist couch talking about how his daddy didn't love him enough, you know, especially when his daddy is Nick Nolte, of course. I mean, if Nick Nolte is your dad, what the fuck do you expect, pal?
You want to get out of the house, though.
Yeah, you really, really do. I would. But I love Nick Nolte in that movie, incidentally. And So that's an underrated film. Here's a film I love watching with my kids. It's called Sky High. It's neither Marvel nor DC. It's with Kurt Russell and Kelly Lynch. And it's just a lot of fun. It is unquestionably a kids' movie. It's a Disney film. It has a lot of cool cameos from various people, like Linda Carter, who played Wonder Woman in the 70s. But it's just very entertaining and very light-spirited and fun, and has actually some really solid action and some very good work by young actors in it. It's a very, very enjoyable family film, and I'd really recommend it if you want to... If you want to see a superhero movie that doesn't try to solve all the problems of the world and doesn't take itself seriously at all and just wants to have fun, that's a good film to see. And I think The Watchmen is really underrated. I think The Watchmen, actually, on multiple viewings, I like that film. I think it's very ambitious, especially in the director's cut, which is longer and has more stuff in it. And I think if you have not seen it, you should check it out on DVD. If you have any interest in the subject matter at all, I think The Watchmen really has grown on me in the past year, and I think it tends to be kind of underrated. So check it out, give it a second look. What are the worst superhero movies, Steve?
Well, in some ways, the worst superhero movies, I can tell you the ones I've disliked the most, but the ones that are supposed to be truly terrible, I've successfully avoided seeing. I mean, they're movies that just look so terrible. And, you know, they look terrible, they come out, they get horrible reviews. I talk to one or two people who have seen them and confirm their terribleness. And, you know, I'm not one of those guys who's like, hey, you know, come over here, this smells like shit, you should smell this. I'm like, all right, I believe you, I'll stay away. Yeah, so, for example, yeah. You know, I loved, again, Frank Miller's, half a Frank Miller podcast.
Really?
I loved the Frank Miller Daredevil comics,
mm-hmm.
And, you know, they made a Daredevil movie, and I've heard so many horrible things about it that I just never even saw it.
You never
bothered
seeing
it? Despite a cameo from Frank Miller.
Well, yeah, I've seen the Daredevil movie, and boy, is it prominent on my worst superhero movies ever list, and at least in the modern superhero era. And it is. It's bad. It's a prime example of, well, first of all, casting Ben Affleck as Daredevil is absurd. He's just about the worst character. I mean, worst actor to play that character one could imagine. And I'm not one of those guys who hates Ben Affleck either. I just think he was miscast. I think it was just bad casting, and it should have been somebody else. It was certainly somebody who at least resembled what Matt Murdock actually looks like would have been nice, you know. or at least felt like Matt Murdock. So, and the movie overall was pretty bad. And of course, the Fantastic Four films, especially the first one.
Yeah, I've seen bits and pieces of those. And they're awful. They're really bad.
They are awful. My kids enjoy them, but I gotta say, I mean, the first one is especially terrible. Pretty much badly cast across the board. I like Chris Evans in the film, actually. He seems to bring some degree of fun to the proceedings. Like, you know, I like what he does with the character. But he's like 10 years too old to play that character. And, I mean, everybody's miscast in the film. It's like they just said, well, what would be the worst casting for all of these roles? And they just went with that. Really, really, and just messy. Special effects are weak. The storyline doesn't hold. And I actually think Fantastic Four could be a pretty cool franchise if you handle it correctly. I don't think
the story
does it justice.
The Fantastic Four is kind of sad in that, you know, whenever there's a band that originated a sound, and then, you know, that band never quite gets their props, and then somebody else copies their sound
right.
and makes a gazillion dollars.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The Fantastic Four were the first superhero family.
The family of superheroes.
And, you know, for anybody who doesn't know, the Fantastic Four, obviously, there's four of them.
Sometimes five, though.
And there's a couple, and
at
then
the, center,
the woman's brother.
Right.
So that's the family. It's not mom and dad and kids.
That's
but
right. And the husband's best friend. He's
and the best friend. But yes, the number four of the Fantastic Four is not a blood relative.
Blood relative, but you know, best friend.
But that's the thing, and it's a powerful concept because you know they're not just a team of people like a baseball team or something. That they're actually family. So you know they try to fight crime or solve, you know, combat evil. All the things superheroes do, but at the end of the day, if they get pissed at each other, they still have to relate as a family. It's a great concept, and it's been expanded on since, and it's almost sad that the Fantastic Four, which originated that concept, turned out to be a terrible movie. And on the other hand, there's The Incredibles,
right.
The Pixar movie, which takes exactly that concept, the superheroes as family.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, that movie's awesome.
Yes, absolutely. And I'll get to The Incredibles a little bit later. The Incredibles handle the whole family thing a little bit different because what you have in The Incredibles is you have parent superheroes who have children superheroes. So it's a little bit of a mutant
concept without calling it that.
Exactly,
but,
exactly. It's.
But still, I just mean combining
the family exactly.
drama with the superhero
exactly.
story.
And Fantastic Four is also interesting because they do not, in fact, have secret identities. They are what they are. Their identities are public.
Everybody knows them, heroes at large.
They don't have to hide who they are. They just are what they are. And that's also an interesting approach. You know, Marvel, courtesy of Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, of course, these guys really, really were geniuses in the field. I mean, they revolutionized the concept of the superhero. So I feel like their names need to be mentioned in our podcast because we're talking about so much material that they have pioneered. But getting back to the Fantastic Four movies, yes, the second one was better than the first one, much better, The Rise of the Silver Surfer, but taken alone, it's still a piece of crap, and it's sad, it's kind of a waste of it's a mishandled franchise, and much more mishandled than the X-Men. I think the X-Men is going to have a relaunch soon. There's a lot of superhero activity in the pipeline, Steve, and we should talk about that a little bit.
We should, and one of the interesting things now with the popularity and the widespread acceptance of superhero movies, you know, there's all these superhero movies. Marvel, who is one of the big superhero comic companies, you know, it's basically Marvel and DC.
Exactly.
And a couple years ago, you know, with the X-Men movies, Marvel licensed their characters out to 20th Century Fox mm-hmm. to make those movies. And a couple of years ago, Marvel had made enough money that they essentially created their own studio.
Uh-huh.
And now Marvel, anytime you see a Marvel superhero movie, that movie is initially bankrolled by Marvel.
Right.
And Marvel then, you know, licenses the movie out for distribution. And what Marvel's done, which is totally unprecedented, is they are creating similar to the comic book world. They're creating different superhero movies, which they will then have those actors and those characters interact with each other in their movies.
Exactly. The cinematic Marvel Universe, which is actually, to any comic book geek, that's very, very exciting. No,
extremely cool.
Because you could theoretically have the same kind of stuff happening as you would in comic books, where you have crossovers, you have different superheroes getting into fights with one another, and having united adventures. Of course, the Avengers is down the line, but first we're going to get the Mighty Thor, probably one of the weirdest Marvel superheroes, because he's not even really a superhero, he's a Norse god come to life. And then you have Captain America, First Avenger, which could, of course, go either way, and followed by the Avengers.
And for anybody listening to this who has no idea what the hell we're talking about, the Avengers were kind of a super team of superheroes. Mm-hmm. And the Avengers took established heroes and said, what if these guys joined together? You know, what if the Incredible Hulk and Captain America and Thor and all these guys got together and formed a, like, super team?
Right.
Well, now they're doing it in the movies, and what they're doing is, for anybody who doesn't know these characters and doesn't know that, before they come out with this super team movie, you know, we've already had the Iron Man movie.
Right,
and two. Where they teased the Avenger concept.
Absolutely.
And we've had the Hulk.
The Hulk, which actually had a cameo by Tony Stark, played by Robert Downey.
Iron Man appears in the Hulk movie. Coming up, as Andre says, we have both Thor and Captain America movie. And the theory Marvel's going on, which is crazy, is that all these movies will be successful in their own right. And then when we have the Avengers movie, you don't have to introduce any of these characters. You know who they all are.
Yeah, dump them in a team together and let them do their stuff. It's a, you know, it's an interesting concept. Of course, it'll stand or fall on how successful the individual films are. I mean, if Thor is a bomb, that could severely impact how Avengers is going to be
received. It might still work, because then you can just reduce Thor's screen time and concentrate on, you know, maybe give Iron Man a little more.
Well, absolutely. Well, invariably, that's probably how it's going to be. I mean, Iron Man is definitely successful. The second one wasn't quite the breakthrough hit that the first one was, but it was still it was certainly not a bomb. Yeah, it's a very successful film, and the Iron Man franchise is very successful, so I'm pretty sure Robert Downey's going to be, like, really the top billing there. There's no question there.
Fascinating that Marvel has apparently worked into the contracts with actors that they will do this. And that was always the problem, say, in the DC world. You know, they made that Superman Returns movie, and, you know, with Batman Begins and The Dark Knight, like, those are completely separate franchises.
Right, right.
Like, it would be a whole, you know, contractual nightmare to have Christian Bale appear in the Superman movie.
Right.
You know, he might just flat out refuse.
Absolutely.
Whereas when Robert Downey Jr. signed on to be Iron Man, it was right there in his contract that, hey, we may put you in this
right.
Avengers
and
movie.
And you have to be cool with that. And,
yeah.
And apparently he
and
wasn't.
And any other actor, you know, the actors signed on to play Captain America in Thor. It's like, look, it's not just your Thor, you may also have to be Thor in this other movie that's not called
in this other franchise.
Thor.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. So, yeah, I think it's a brilliant concept. Again,
we got to see
the
works. Yeah.
Well, let's see what happens. I'm very excited about it. I wish DC would do the same thing. I mean, they try to revive the Superman franchise with Superman Returns. And what did you think of that film?
It's right in the middle there.
Yeah.
I don't know. Superman Returns is a really strange film. Well, it's like it's neither great, it's neither bad. To call it mediocre seems wrong.
Yeah.
There are parts of that movie that are really beautiful. There are parts I think don't work.
Yeah.
I will say the biggest problem with Superman Returns is it has two different viewpoints, which I think are totally opposite, and it tries to put them in the same movie, and it doesn't work. To me, you know, if you're making a Superman movie where Superman is basically, you know, he's the ultimate man, he's God on Earth, you can have a movie where the point of view of the movie is for the normal people and how they react to Superman. Or you could have a movie which tries to go into Superman's psyche.
Mm-hmm.
And what does Superman think? How does it feel to be this god among mortals?
Right.
And I feel that movie tries to have it both ways, and that's really weird.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
Because if you're making a movie from, you know, how people react to this iconic figure, that's interesting. And if you want to be what it's like to be the iconic figure, that's also valid. But I just don't know how that meshes together.
Well, also, I think it's a bit of a... There was an ill-conceived aspect to Superman Returns. They seem... Bryan Singer specifically, who directed the film and wrote it as well, or co-wrote it, seemed to have a concept that he wanted to revive the Christopher Reeve Superman films. So he uses the music from the Christopher Reeve movies. He uses the opening titles from the Christopher Reeve Superman movies. And on top of that, he casts an actor to play Superman, but not so much Superman as he casts an actor to play Christopher Reeve. And it just doesn't play at all, because it's just wrong. It feels like it's out of time, like the movie is supposed to be some kind of a sequel to Superman 2, but if you watch Superman 2, it really doesn't make sense that this is a sequel to Superman 2, since the world of this movie, the visual trappings, the art direction are completely different. He brings back Lex Luthor, this time played by Kevin Spacey. Now, I'm sure Kevin Spacey could play a great Lex Luthor, but what they seem to want Kevin Spacey to do is to play Gene Hackman's Lex Luthor, and that kind of doesn't work. It's just the whole thing is... It just doesn't work, and it's I feel sad for everything. It's just a mishandling of Superman. It's really they had a chance to recreate the franchise in a unique, original way, and they just kind of blew it. So now Superman's a dead fish, and hopefully Christopher Nolan, I believe, has it on his docket to produce, you know, a new Superman franchise, and I'm really hoping that, you know, they take a kind of a different angle at the character.
Yeah.
I really love Superman, so I'd really like Superman handled well in a film and in a way that would be different from the Richard Donner film. But I don't know. I mean, Warner Brothers has the big next Warner Brothers superhero movie is of course the Green Lantern with Ryan Reynolds and.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I kind of like Ryan Reynolds. He seems like a good casting choice for Hal Jordan. He is another one of those guys. He's an excellent comedian. He has he can be a fine dramatic actor. He looks like he would be a believable superhero type. In other words, you're not, you know, they're not like trying to stick Jack Black into tights and hope that flies, because that almost never does. So that could be either good or bad, you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens. A lot of times, I think, as Iron Man proved to us, is when you take these lesser-known characters, or like second-tier characters that are not part of the lexicon, that works out very well, because they have a lot of leeway to add personality to these characters, and because people aren't super familiar with, let's say, Green Lantern, then a guy like Ryan Reynolds can come in and just knock it out of the park, the same way that Robert Downey did with Iron Man. And so we'll see what happens then. They're also relaunching Spider-Man and setting it entirely in high school. So Spider-Man is going to go back to his roots, as it were, and be the teenage kid with superpowers. And that could be either interesting or it could be complete nonsense. We don't know. It's just hard to tell where it's going to go.
Yeah, I mean, the X-Men franchise is about to go back even before the X-Men franchise started.
Exactly. The X-Men franchise supposedly going back to the 60s with First Class.
I think it's going even before that, is what I'm saying. In the comic book world, the X-Men series started with a school of mutant superheroes led by, you know, this
Professor X.
Professor X. And I'm told that the X-Men movie they're planning starts with a young Professor X.
Exactly, and young Magneto. I mean, they're best friends, and the movie is about how what happens to them, how they the ideological split about these two people who, you know.
I mean, that's even before, though. I mean,
absolutely,
the first
absolutely.
That's a movie that sounds like it might even climax with the founding of the school.
Absolutely, probably will.
As opposed to being about, you know, as opposed to a movie about the early days of the school, it's about before the early days.
The formation
of the
school and the ideological split between Magneto and Professor X. One mutant who essentially wants to be a mutant separatist, that's Magneto, and the other one who wants to coexist with the humans and kind of protect them, and that's Professor X. Interesting concept, again, and that could be kind of interesting. There's another Wolverine movie in the making. We were talking earlier. The great Darren Aronofsky is potentially talked about to direct it. I don't know whether that's going to happen or not, but that's an interesting concept. I think Darren Aronofsky could really kick ass with a Wolverine movie.
Kick-ass Wolverine.
I would love a kick-ass Wolverine movie, despite my not particular love for Hugh Jackman's version of Wolverine. I think there's enough there to make a decent movie. And that was not the case with the first solo Wolverine movie. That was kind of silly. You know, again, not horrible, but okay. This could be interesting. So there's a lot of interesting developments in the world of superhero cinema. Let's backtrack a little bit. What are your favorite superhero movies?
I love The Dark Knight. I love the first two Spider-Man movies. I love X2, and those are probably my favorite. And I guess we'll save The Incredibles about if that counts.
Pretty much what you just mentioned. I will put Iron Man, and even to some extent Iron Man 2. Like I said, I kind of bunch them together in the list of my personal favorites because I've always thought that Iron Man was like the best property Marvel had. It just really works from a cinematic perspective, I think, and I think they did. Jon Favreau did a fabulous job. Actually, my top superhero movie is The Incredibles, and I think it very much counts. I don't think you really need to be either Marvel or DC to make a great superhero movie. In fact, I have two non-Marvel and DC films on my list, The Incredibles being at the very top. That movie's excellent. Everybody's seen it. I don't need to tout it. Everybody, it's a masterpiece. It's my favorite Pixar film. It's my favorite superhero film.
It's a contender for my favorite film of the past decade.
It's fantastic. It's just a flawless masterpiece. It's a movie that just grows on you every time. It's a massive artistic achievement. It works for all ages, and you know, it's just great. Another film I really like that's kind of off the beaten path is Unbreakable, M. Night Shyamalan's second film.
Yes.
And, you know, people kind of forget that that is basically a superhero movie.
It is.
It's very solid. It takes itself way seriously, and a lot of people are turned off by that. But honestly, I think it works very well, and it's a very effective film. It's kind of potent, and it works. It plays on multiple viewings. It doesn't have the gigantor surprise twist ending. It does have a twist ending, but it's not one of those. It's not like The Sixth Sense, where your entire outlook on the entire film is changed by the ending. It's just a surprise. But excellent film, definitely worth reviewing. And on my list is also Batman Begins and Dark Knight, which I regard as kind of a couple, and the first two Spider-Man films, and Superman 1. That's my list.
Yeah, that's, you know, when we were talking earlier about, you know, what are the underrated, and I will say a lot of superhero films I feel are kind of properly rated.
Yeah, they are. They're right in the
provided,
middle.
Of course, you're not one of those people who just dismiss superhero films in general.
Yeah.
In which case, I don't know what to say.
It's, in this case, you're probably not listening to this podcast.
No.
But I mean, if you think that the genre is for shit, A, you're wrong, and B, well, that's fine. I mean, some people don't like Westerns, some people don't like romantic comedies, some people don't like sports movies, you don't like superhero movies, that's fine. But, you know, I think the genre is vast enough that there's a lot to offer to a lot of different people. I think I'd like to sort of conclude this on this, with this question. Is there a superhero movie you would like to see made? Like, is there a personal favorite down that's not really in the pipeline, but you think would make a killer film?
I am more a fan of Hugh Jackman's portrayal of Wolverine than you are.
Mm-hmm.
And it could just be a case of managed expectations that I went for so long wanting a Wolverine, you know, a portrayal of Wolverine in the movies and just expecting them to really fuck it up. So the fact that Hugh Jackman gets some aspects of the character right.
Yeah, yeah.
I hand it off. He doesn't have the edge to him.
No.
And, you know, it's like I expected Wolverine, you know, in some of the comic book portrayals of Wolverine is Wolverine's kind of a scuzzy looking guy.
Yeah.
You know, like Wolverine is, you know, a lot of times he's muscular, but he looks more like, you know, the biggest badass at your local pub.
Yeah.
Like, that's what Wolverine's like. And, yeah, I just kind of knew.
He doesn't look like the sexiest man alive, is that what
you're
saying?
No. You know, a lot of times Wolverine in his non, you know, superhero outfit is seen wearing a wife beater and a dirty pair of pants
he's
and just
filthy.
Drinking it.
He's a scuzzy. Yeah. He's trash.
He's a scuzzy bar guy.
Yeah.
And, I mean, no one's ever going to invest millions and millions of dollars on a franchise, you know, on the back of that.
Right.
You know, I know. Hugh Jackman's a little pretty. But other aspects of him, he does. Well, it could be worse, is what I'm
saying.
Well,
that's true.
It could be worse.
Could be worse.
He gets the humorous aspects of the character. He has a little bit of an edge.
He can deliver a one-liner, absolutely.
He looks all right in the haircut, which I also thought maybe nobody could pull off.
He does. Amazingly, he looks okay with
it. But I'm still waiting. You know, the rumored plot of the next Wolverine movie is basically the plot of this beloved Wolverine miniseries that Frank Miller illustrated, where Wolverine is in Japan.
Right.
And Wolverine had a Japanese girlfriend, and there's a lot of ninjas, and it was an awesome
ninjas, yakuza, samurai,
it's an
you
awesome
name it.
Wolverine series. It reinvented the character, and it just touches on things that, you know, continue to be cool to 14-year-old boys and those of us
of
who
all
remember
ages
what it was like to be a 14-year-old boy. I mean, like, Wolverine's cool, the Yakuza are cool,
yeah,
ninjas are cool,
yeah,
you put them all together and don't screw it up, and it's awesome. There's
right.
a love story.
Oh, yeah, it's fantastic. And it's set in an exotic locale that could be handled very well.
It's one of those, if they can pull that movie off,
yeah,
I would be delighted.
Yeah.
I'm really not optimistic about that getting pulled off.
Yeah, well, we'll see. So what you're saying is you it's not like you have anything specific that you want to see made. You just want him to do a good job with the stuff that's down the pipe.
Yeah, what about you, Andre? Is there a superhero movie you haven't seen that you'd like to
it's
see?
Like I said, I definitely want them, like yourself, I would like to see a different take on Superman, a different, unique and you know, faithful take on the Superman character. I'd really like to see that. But I actually my idea is almost silly because there is characters from like the 70s that I was a big fan of, and those characters are Power Man and Iron Fist. And I think, just stick with me here for a second, Steve.
I'm waiting.
Power Man and Iron Fist starring The Rock and Owen Wilson. It's comedic, a lot
thing.
Of action. But, you know, if you read those stories, they are kind of comedic. These are two guys. It was a partnership. There was a black guy, a white guy. They were, you know, they had completely different sensibilities. It was very 70s. They had these groovy chick girlfriends. They were detectives in Harlem. You know, it had a lot of, like, ethnic humor, and it had a lot of kung fu. It had a lot of aspects that, films do very well. So I think you take those characters combined with the fact that they're beloved characters among the people that know them, but they're not characters that everybody knows. So you can totally plug in popular actors into those roles and have them do a fantastic job and not piss off the fanboys because they're completely way off the beaten path. So it's kind of silly. I don't think this would be the Citizen Kane of the superhero genre, but I think that that would be a fun project for everyone involved, and I could completely visualize it all down to the silly outfits that they used to wear and actually kind of take that with a... And even set it in the 70s. Kind of take it back in time rather than set make it contemporary. Just screw it and set it in the 70s. Have them have afros and wear long leather coats and so on and so forth. I think that would be a lot of fun.
You know, similar to you, like to see another crack at Superman, I'd love to see another crack at Daredevil just because I think it's a great character. Similar to Batman... I guess Daredevil does have some powers, but Daredevil is... The comics did a great job of combining the vigilante with the lawyer. Daredevil tries to fight crime both legally and extra legally. And it was an interesting character, and I feel like that could be a great cinematic character if done right.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know what's interesting, and this is sort of going outside of the realm of cinema, but in all honesty, I mean, they should take some of these second or even third tier characters from both Marvel and DC and just put them on TV shows. I mean, this is what I'm not understanding. Why not make like a Moon Knight TV series or a Green Arrow TV series?
And do that after the success of the Tim Burton Batman. You know, there was a Flash
the
TV
The Flash,
series.
Which wasn't actually bad, but nobody cared. There wasn't the interest. Right now, there seems to be a genuine interest in the superhero genre. And, you know, they have a couple of superhero shows. The Smallville, which is a Superman TV series that's... now going into its 10th season, it turns out being like one of the longest running science fiction shows on television. It's very successful, and actually Green Arrow is on that show. The kid who plays him does a very nice job, and they should spin him out and give him his own series. They actually handle Green Arrow very well on that show. And it's just a natural medium for superheroes. And I don't mean like revisionist stuff like Heroes, which was very good in the first season, but then completely collapsed into a bunch of nonsense. But you know, take established characters and give them a TV show. That's Marvel Studios should definitely do that. I mean, why not? It's perfect. It's serialized. It's ideal for the genre. And you don't have to spend billions of dollars on movie on making the films and marketing the films. You could do it much cheaper as a weekly dramatic series. And could be very effective. I think that's going to be the next sort of trend in the superhero genre. That's my prediction.
Yeah.
Okay. That's all I got, man.
So that was our kind of free-ranging discussion of superhero movies.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for joining us again. I'm Andre Shane.
I'm Steve Haskin. We'll see you next time.
We can be heroes.